PBS, Eye on the World, the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College. I'm John Batchelor, and we begin in chronology. The Dominican Republic sharing the island with Haiti, the troubled Haiti. An election on May 19, soon enough, within these next days. Mexico, an election on June 2nd, very fundamental to the success of the Americas, the election in Mexico. And then Venezuela, a promised election, July 28th, profoundly troubled. We begin with the Dominican Republic. Professor, I confess, I didn't know about this until you brought it up to me, because it hasn't made the Reuters headlines, and that's as much as I know on day to day. What are the themes? Who are the candidates? I see here a headline, ahead of general elections, church releases list of endorsed candidates in Dominican Republic, May 19. Where are we going?
Well, John, this is really a good news story, but perhaps because it's too much of a good news story without the requisite drama, it's received so little coverage in the press. What you have is a free market, strongly pro-U.S. country with a pro-U.S. president who, because of his success, is largely moving towards winning by a vast majority in elections. So current president Luis Abinader, who again has pursued anti-corruption platform, which really is very impressive given the levels of corruption and drug flows that the Dominican Republic has had to deal with, but running on an anti-corruption platform and has made a lot of progress with respect to that and drugs, as well as really having some pretty significant economic success in an area where that doesn't apply to everyone, with the Dominican economy growing 4% 2023, expected to grow perhaps 5% this year. So a lot for people in the country to be happy about, although certainly not everything. And so no surprise that Abinader and his Modern Revolutionary Party are broadly expected to win this Sunday, May 19th. Previous three-time president Leonel Fernandez, who in his own right is a very respected figure and intellectual who has done many important things for the country, is in a strong second place. Local mayor by the name of Abdel Martinez, is his people force is also in the running. But unless something changes, it really looks like Abinader, with his success and alignment with the United States, will probably take the election and continue to move things in a relatively pro-U.S. direction, doing some work with the PRC, but largely in the context of strong institutions and relative transparency.
To Mexico. Claudia Sheinbaum has an enormous lead, according to polls. Wide lead is how Reuters puts it. So we begin to anticipate Claudia Sheinbaum as the new president of Mexico. And there will be immediate complications to do with, again, our non-transparent adversaries, the Chinese, a vehicle called BYD that is waiting at all the entry ports of the world to flood the markets with a inexpensive electric vehicle built in China, and what you'd have to say is lawfare or wiggle room on the USMCA. We can't, at this point, Reuters is not anticipating Sheinbaum's direction on this, but as I understand it crudely, the Chinese forbidden from entering our markets directly now that the president has voiced a very heavy tariff on green technology flooding from China, intend to use Mexico and manufacture BYD vehicles in Mexico, not for the US, for Mexico. But then again, the word leakage pops up in Reuters reporting from the White House. Do we have any guess what Sheinbaum is going to say of these matters? Because immediately she'll be tangling with the two powers.
Sheinbaum is likely to offer both continuity, but I think some important departures from what you see Andrés Manuel López Obrador having done. So as is widely known in the June 2nd election, it's almost almost inevitable at this point that Sheinbaum wins. Recent polls show her with a 49% versus a 28% to the her next competitor of the traditional coalition of three parties, Xochitl Galvez and the Citizens Movement Party with Jorge Alvarez Maynez having a 10%. So it looks like Sheinbaum, who's again the anointed successor of AMLO, will be the next president, heading Moreno. Moreno will also have substantial power in the legislature as well as the Mexican states with virtual a domination of state governors by Moreno. The interesting dimension is, as you pointed to, John, that in addition to Mexico's very real ongoing public security crisis with groups like the Sinaloa cartel and the Jalisco Nueva Generación cartel consolidating power and the enormous amounts of drugs, especially fentanyl, that flows through Mexico or with the orchestration of these major cartels. Another one of the issues, because Mexico is integrated into the U.S. And Canadian economies through USMCA, which is the trade agreement in 2020 that superseded NAFTA, when we talk about the U.S.-China rivalry and decoupling, one of the things that the Chinese have begun to do, worried about loss of access into the U.S. market because of tariffs and other restrictions, especially in things like chips or electric cars. Chinese companies have begun to move quietly but in droves into Mexico. And so in places like Nuevo León, who have received a lot of new investment with decoupling and nearshoring, an enormous amount. Actually, the most significant investor in places like the border state of Nuevo León, among others, have been the Chinese. Now, that comes on top of a strong Chinese presence in the green energy sector. For example, with Zuma Energy, where the Chinese bought in several years ago, the Chinese mining firm Ganfeng bought into the lithium sector, although that did not turn out well. And as, of course, you alluded to, John, the mega Chinese car company, especially known for its electric cars, BYD, has recently announced that they are going to set up a 150,000 vehicle per year truck facility to produce their hybrid Shark vehicle, possibly by the end of this year. And so the interesting dimension is that as Sheinbaum takes over from AMLO, who was not necessarily the most pro-Chinese president that the Mexicans have ever had. Sheinbaum, given that she has real commitments to the environment and real commitments to technology leadership, and yet also shares the nationalist orientation that AMLO has, it'll be interesting to see whether in the course of taking green projects forward and pursuing the industrialization of Mexico, whether Sheinbaum will continue to allow this massive Chinese investment, and whether, frankly, that will create a forcing function for the United States to be able to say, okay, we're going to start taking actions to restrict the Chinese, as you pointed out, kind of sneaking in under the border, a phenomenon this, as you referred to, is known as leakage within the framework of USMCA.
Mexico, Reuters reports, has overtaken China as the top source of imports into the U.S., with more than 115 billion of goods originating from there in the first 3 months of 24, versus less than 100 billion from China. Overtaken, it swamped it. With that surge, concerns, says Reuters, have grown about Mexico becoming a transshipment hub. I love the way they say concerns have grown, having just told us it's already happened. And they're growing faster. And at this point, I take it, Professor, this is a battle that's in the future. It hasn't been joined yet. The White House is indicating we don't like this. Mexico is saying we're going ahead, and the Chinese are showing up to build plants. That's where we are. The battle is in the future.
It is, John. It's a deepening battle. I would say it's a battle that's being joined right now. There are basically domestic content provisions within USMCA that are actually, thanks to negotiations during the Trump administration, stronger and higher than they were under NAFTA. But having said that, the question is, how does one prevent essentially the reinvention of Chinese companies as legally Mexican companies in order to kind of get in under those tariff barriers by creatively meeting the domestic content requirements? migrants. So I suspect that we're already seeing that Mexico has resumed its traditional role, as the principal supplier to the U.S. over China. But as more and more of that, the goods coming in from Mexico are actually Chinese, I think we're going to start to see, tariffs and pressures and other decisions. And indeed, U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai has already kind of signaled that this is an item of concern that's being watched by the administration.
The third election pending July 28th, we believe it's going forward in Venezuela. And then this from Buenos Aires. Argentina's government is set to ramp up pressure on Venezuela to grant safe passage to six opposition aides who sought refuge in its embassy, Argentina's embassy in Caracas. Two senior Argentine officials told Reuters that the administration of Maduro, President Maduro, who has looked to head off political rivals ahead of the election, had reneged on promises to allow the six to safely leave the country. Professor, this has the drama of opera. Suddenly, Milei, who sings a pretty song, is pushed forward to say what you'd have to characterize as harsh things to Maduro, who does a great job of being a villain. We have now two actors on the stage, Milei and Maduro. And the issue is six souls hiding in the embassy in Caracas. How does this sort itself out?
Well, that's a great question, John, because underlying issue time and time again is that Maduro and the Chavistas, who have shown themselves to tenaciously cling on to power and not to be, innocent, stupid people, understand that, you're not going to take a real risk of ceding power when that would result not only in the loss of your political control and in the loss of the fortunes that they've amassed over the years, but because of many of the different cases over narco-trafficking and other forms of corruption accumulated against individuals in the military and the political leadership, that losing power could very well mean losing their liberty. And so I think time and time again, you saw Maduro playing with the prospect of elections in order to try to get out from under sanctions or other agreements, such as the release of a former key figure, Saab. However, having said that, now, although Venezuela successfully was able to exclude the most popular opposition figure, Maria Corina Machado, who again came out of her primary with 93%, and then they excluded her designated successor, Corina Yoris. And then finally, when they allowed Edmundo Gonzalez to come in and register under the Unitary Platform, even with Gonzalez basically is the stand-in. There's so much frustration in Venezuela right now that Gonzalez, as the designated representative of the opposition, not necessarily for his own charisma, but because he represents anything but what we've lived for the past 18 years. Vote. Gonzalez is now polling something like 64%, 40 points up over Maduro. And so the question is, the lead by Maduro is so great that it's too big to steal, I think is the word that the New York Times had used, whether the election could be postponed, whether Gonzalez could be at the last minute disqualified as a candidate with all of the problems that has. And what you alluded to, John, also is really kind of a reflection of kind of the footprint of some of those dirty deals that the Venezuelans continue to be engaged in on a daily basis. And that case, it was basically trumping up charges of a supposed political conspiracy involving a number of the people closest to Maria Corina Machado, including her key advisor, Magali Mehta, to the point where when the conspiracy charges were announced against them, they fled to the Argentine embassy. They asked for asylum, and they've basically been stuck there for a while. But to me, that pressure, although an interesting story in its own right, is really also a broader signal of the fact that all gloves are off in terms of the power of the Venezuelan state under Maduro to prevent any candidate from putting at risk his hold on power.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College, three elections in the Americas soon enough. We turn to a catastrophe. Brazil, the flooding in the southernmost state. And what is to be done? One immediate version is relocate, migration. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bauer.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.